Justin, your mic's muted.
Okay, take two. Hi, I'm Justin Boyd.
I'm distraught.
I'm Apocalypse.
I'm Marcy, and I am in mourning.
Yeah, and we are the Watchers in the Basement, y'all.
Welcome to the Watchers in the Basement. Today, we are here to discuss episode 5 of X-Men 97. But, you know, Brittany, before we get to the episode, last week we had a milestone, and I actually didn't know about it until after it happened. You want to let people know what we had going on last week?
Yeah, I want to let everyone know that Justin's fired because he doesn't remember this momentous date in Watchers history. Like,
I do want to point out, though, that the microphone has never happened. This is the first time in like 200 and something episodes where my microphone was actually muted. So,
no, I'm talking about the fact that you forgot our 5-year anniversary, Justin. That's what I'm talking about.
I thought it was 6, honestly. Oh, God. So, yeah, Cyclops 5 years.
Cyclops move, Justin. Cyclops right. Move.
Yeah, no.
5 or 6. I like both numbers, okay?
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, no, but in all seriousness, we did celebrate our 5th year anniversary as the Watchers in the Basement. We started this little podcast April 12th, 2019. It started off with our debut episode of season 8 preview for Game of Thrones. And boy, we had no idea what was about to happen. So, yeah. Yeah, it's exciting. It's exciting for us that we get to celebrate 5 years. And since that debut episode, we've added on more watchers to this podcast, like Marcy and Tristan and Amber. We've even had guest appearances from our brother in the North, Drew, has been fun. Also Desmonet, who's been a part of our, what do you call it? Oh God, what are those episodes called,
our
Justin?
Drafts. Yeah,
our drafts. Good Lord, yeah. Couldn't think of the word. So yeah, you know, we've definitely expanded. We've got almost 300 episodes, if I'm not mistaken. It's really exciting. It's a really exciting time. And yeah, I'm just very disappointed in you, Justin, that you didn't remember.
Appreciate it. Well, congrats to us. Well, we got to move on because there's so much to talk about in this episode. And I just want to get everyone's initial thoughts, as we always do. Frank, I want to throw it to you first. What'd you think about episode 5 titled Remember It?
Man, I got to stop giving out these 10 out of 10s. But like, again, man, it's just a fucking 10 out of 10. They just keep ratcheting it up. Like, I was kind of skeptical about the pacing of the episodes and how fast things are going, but it's flowing so well. And like, they're doing a good job of like fleshing out these storylines and like really just like focusing on characters who didn't really get a lot of like screen time or like poignant story time in the OG series, like Gambit. So like to get these vignette episodes of these feature characters and like fleshing them out, it's kind of like they're filling out the gaps from the OG series to now, and they're doing a great job, man. It feels like an MCU level live screen event when I'm watching these episodes, which it's very hard for a 40-year-old man like myself to like keep focus on, but like to keep me like just focus for 35 minutes every Tuesday night or every Wednesday morning. They're doing a great job with these stories.
Yeah, I agree. Marcy, what are your thoughts on this episode?
Frank, don't age us. We are still 39. But I am mad because I did not sign up for this. I was like, okay, X-Men, like, this is going to be fun. Like, maybe, like, a little bit of drama. This is too much drama. This is like when I started watching The Last of Us, because I was like, oh, you guys say it's going to be great. It's about a video game. Fully invested in that. I'm fully invested in this. It had humor. It was campy like a soap opera, and it even like made fun of itself that way in this episode. And then it just hit us with the drama, just interpersonal relationship drama, the drama just in the attack of Genosha. So like, no, like it was a lot, but it was a really good episode.
Brittany, what say you?
I'm distraught, damn it. Man, like I not that I have any inclination whatsoever on the storylines. obviously many of us are not as well versed in the X-Men comics like Frank is. So not having any expectations, and that's just how I'm living my life now when it comes to shows and movies and things like that. I try not to go in with expectations. I did not expect we get a mid-season finale. Like, Jesus. Like, who? Bo. You, sir, are a brilliant asshole for giving us this episode. And I was on Twitter after this episode aired, and I was reading all the comments and tweets from Bo to fans and him confirming some things, and we'll talk about that later. But just where he was in 2020 writing this season and the storyline, the use of music, holy shit, y'all, I was impressed. And I mean, talk about writing, like masterful writing and all the elements that this episode makes you feel is, it's just beautifully well done. And for that, I hate him for it. Like, damn you.
Yeah. Of course, you're speaking of Bo DiMaio, who is the fired showrunner for X-Men I-7. So, but yeah, so, I mean, so far, just excellent. You know, Brittany said there was a mid-season finale. This could have been a series finale. This easily could have been a season finale, but this is episode 5 of 10. So we've got 5 more of these to go. So, you know, the bar is insanely high after this episode, which was just incredible. And I want to go around the horn real quick with y'all, because I know after this episode aired, a lot of praise online, a lot of hype for this episode. And my question to everyone, start with Frank, is this the best like form of X-Men media that we've ever seen on a screen? Taking the comic books out of it, because that's source material, that's a different medium, but like animated shows, movies, you know, is this the best we've seen of the X-Men?
That's a great question. I'm going to say yes and no for this point, for this reason only, because Marvel / MCU / Kevin Feige, they do a great job of not just creating the content, but placement of this content. And I think the MCU over the last 10 years has created, not just, I mean, there's always been comic book super fans like myself, but it's created this level of like interest with like casual movie fans and casual show fans. And I think that the momentum of the MCU and the momentum of Avengers Endgame and phase 2, 3, and 4 has left us wanting more, not just the comic book nerds, but people in general. And with this show now coming back out right after the momentum of what the MCU has done in the last 10 years, it's highlighted the greatness of the show. The show was great. But again, like if people go back and watch X-Men Evolution and watch Wolverine and X-Men, those are great content. Those are great cartoons as well. They just didn't have as many eyeballs on it because the casual fan wasn't watching those cartoons. But if you go back, so once the show is over with, you go back and watch Wolverine and X-Men, you go back and watch X-Men Evolution and those X-Men series, you're going to be like, damn, this is great content. This is a great storyline. Mm-hmm. They've always been great. It's just now you have more eyeballs on it now because of the success of Disney Marvel.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. Definitely more people are seeing this content than the other forms. Great point. Marcy, what say you? Do you, I mean, have you seen many of the movies? And if so, how does this compare to the movies and other animated versions of the X-Men?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's been a while since I've seen the movies. So the movies were good. I think the show is great. I love Frank's point that there's just so many eyeballs on this. When the original animated series came out in the 90s, you couldn't just like rewatch it whenever you wanted. Like you either watched it when it came on or you were out of luck unless there were reruns or like if they sold the VHS versions. But I mean, I've watched this episode 4 times since it aired last Wednesday. So I think Frank made a good point. And I think now the show, the themes, what it's portraying and what it's trying to say, I think it's really important in society because you can tie it back to not only things that were happening back in the 90s when the original animated series was created, but even things that are happening now or that have happened in the last few years that he was referencing when he wrote this particular episode and other episodes in this season, that you're like, wow, this is supposed to be like entertainment, right? Like, it's not supposed to be that deep, but you can make it that deep and it can both entertain you, but then also show you a lot of aspects about society that are either good, bad, that we definitely need to work on. So I think it's a brilliant piece of entertainment and media for that.
Yeah, no, that's great stuff. And I agree also with, you know, like the MCU has raised the level of really all this genre, really movies and everything. It's brought more people to this, this medium. Brittany, what about you? Think this is the best version the X-Men have ever appeared on a screen?
You know, I love the movies. I love the original, like X-Men, X2, X-Men, you know, The Last Stand. I really love those movies. I've watched all like the, you know, First Class, Days of Future Past, all those. I've seen all those as well. And they're great, you know, in their own right. However, I feel with continuing this show where it left off in the 90s, and it's catering not to that same young audience. That young audience has grown up, and therefore the nature of the story to a degree has grown up as well. It's not being, you know, spoon-fed to us as if we don't understand these things. We're grown. We've experienced some terrible life events that have gone on in the world, let alone here in the United States. And this episode alone spoke volumes to those tragedies that have gone on throughout our time as we've grown up. And I think to kind of convey that message into an animation is just so brilliantly done because of the nostalgia behind it, but then two, it's very mature content. And I think what a lot of people, I've read a lot from, you know, the naysayers who feel that, oh, you know, this show and X-Men, it's woke culture and this and that. I'm thinking, what rock have you been living under? Like, X-Men has always had these struggles because they were different and people were working against them and trying to fight against them because they were different. That's not anything new. That's been around since
the dawn of
time. That's the point. Yeah. Exactly. And so when you start tying in things that are social issues of today that are more prevalent today than it was back in the 90s, now all of a sudden it's woke. No, it's not. It's now at the forefront because it matters so much more. And you're speaking to a larger volume of people who can relate to that now. It's no different. And so I think Bo's writing and incorporating, like I said, those events, I know like Pulse Nightclub, that was like a big thing for him when he was writing this episode. And, you know, it wasn't until Christian, who of McDorks, he actually sent me that tweet from Bo responding to a tweet, had said, yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking about when I was writing, because I had friends that were at Pulse that night. So, you know, it's very personal, but it's something we can all relate to in one fashion or another.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, like, the people that are using woke, they just kind of use that as a buzzword. I don't think they even know what that means. And obviously that is a very vocal minority, because this show is universally beloved. I will say that I want people to kind of pump the brakes, or maybe have a better understanding when they say, oh, this is the best thing the MCU's ever given us. Okay. So first off, it's not in the MCU. It's Marvel. Now, granted, it isn't in the Marvel multiverse. And there is a character that we see in this episode that could very well tie it to the MCU, that being the Watcher, which we see very briefly in the sky. We'll talk about that maybe a little bit more in a little bit later. But like, this is not the MCU. And the MCU has given us some of the best things ever. Infinity War, Endgame, Captain America, all the Captain America movies, but Civil War, the first Iron Man movie, the Winter Soldier. So like, it's not the MCU. It's also not better than the MCU, but it is very good. So let's just celebrate all this stuff and stop trying to, like, you know, compare it to the MCU, because, or it's almost like a shot. It's like, well, the MCU has been bad for the last 3 or 4 years. And so we'll say that this animated show is better than the MCU. And it's like, no, like Frank said, if it wasn't for the MCU, this show wouldn't exist. It would. So anyway, that's kind of my little soapbox, but let's get to the main topic. And, you know, in journalism school, I learned that if it bleeds, it leads. There's a lot of bleeding at the end of this episode. And some major characters, I think characters plural, died. Frank, I want to throw it to you. First off, talk to me about seeing Gambit sacrifice himself and die. And two-part question, do you think, did Magneto also die? Did Madeline Pryor, who came back, did she die? It appeared that Callisto died. Who else do you think died in addition to Gambit? And just talk about his death.
There's a scene where when Magneto asks Gambit what's the damage, and he says a lot of people are gone. And like, there's a scene where you see Banshee on the ground. I think it was Madeline Pryor as well, Callisto, a couple other unnamed mutants. When Magneto is fighting the three-headed Frankenstein Sentinel, and the Sentinel wins, he says the Omega threat level is neutralized. He didn't say he didn't say eliminated.
Right.
And we didn't see a body. So I don't think Magneto is gone. Okay. I think neutralized and eliminated are two different things. Because Magneto is a very powerful mutant. And yes. And he had a force field there protecting him and some of the Morlocks. I don't think he's gone. I think he's knocked out. I think he's gravely injured, but I don't think he's dead. Gambit dead. He dead. Yep. Like he gone. I wasn't really shocked, because for me, the show did a great job of like adding the Cable element. Cable is a time traveler. Yep. When Cable comes back and sees his mother, he says, "No, not again." So that tells me that one, Cable has tried multiple times to come back to this certain time point to stop whatever was going to happen. And two, his time band expired again on him. So something's going on between the future and the present to where he can't get there early enough to stop whatever's going on. Mm-hmm. And the three-headed Sentinel monster is not from this timeline. It's from the future as well. That green spark, something sent that thing back. I don't know what did or who did, mm-hmm. but something sent that thing back, and Cable's trying to stop it. It looked like Cable failed in the future of like it coming back, and he came back with it, mm-hmm. and he can't seem to get ahead of it. And what's your second question? I forgot your second question.
No, you kind of answered everything. You answered who you thought was dead, and also just you talked about how Gambit's death, the impact of that for the storyline. I think you covered everything. Marcy, I want to throw to you real quick, or Brittany, let me throw to you. Go ahead, Brittany.
I just wanted to kind of piggyback on what Frank was saying. So I will confirm, and this is by way of Bo DiMaio on Twitter, as I said, he was live after the episode premiered. He did say Madeline Pryor is dead. Now, she was vaporized because Cable is being pulled back into his time, you see that same green light that Frank was talking about, and it kind of hone in on her, and she's gone. Like, she's vaporized. Who you see on the ground that looks very similar to Madeline Pryor is actually Moira McTaggart, who we did see in this episode. Very briefly in the council, she's a Scottish doctor that we briefly met. She's like the only human that's allowed to be on the council.
But they don't similar though.
Well, because the hair was pulled back, they kind of look similar. You know, they're you know, it's an event that was going on, and that's who Bo confirmed was there on the screen. He basically said Madeline had been vaporized. Who we saw on the screen was Moira.
Okay, good point. Okay, I didn't even notice that, honestly. Marcy, I want to throw it back to you. Tell me what you thought about the Gambit sacrifice scene and just kind of his arc. I mean, he had a big arc in this so far in the season, but also in this episode.
I mean, I think it was kind of foreshadowed all throughout the episode, right? You know, he told her early on, like there's no white picket fence reward for us. So that's like, you know, foreshadowing. And it was sad. Like, I was like, no, don't do it. And he's like, the odds are always in my favor. And then like, that's when he, you know, gets stabbed. And it's like, damn it. Why did you have to say that? You cursed yourself. You jinxed yourself. So that was really sad. It was also sad when just kind of like Magneto's got the Morlocks huddled around him and Leech is just kind of looking up at him and they share this look and he's like, don't be afraid. And I was like, oh my goodness, like, why is this so sad? Why am I feeling all of these feelings? So yeah, RIP Gambit. Hopefully he's not dead. Like, hopefully, obviously, they can bring him back some way, somehow. But it was just so sad when Rogue, you know, she told him, like, I can't feel you. And that's why, like, we can't be together. And then she, like, really couldn't feel him because he was dead. And I was like, damn you, stupid cartoon that's making me feel feelings.
And that's, like, a callback even to Wanda Maximoff when she finally is able to, you know, see Vision during WandaVision. She, you know, kind of hovers her hand over his body and she's like, I can't feel you, which is opposite to what she said or Vision said to her before he was obliterated, that he goes, I just feel you. And it's like, ah, why is this happening to us? Oh my God.
And you know, the death scene, I think Frank might also recognize this, but the way that Rogue is holding Gambit and how he's dead, it is very similar to the Death of Superman cover, the famous Death of Superman cover, which came out around the same time in the 90s, because in the 90s, the X-Men were super popular. Wolverine was red hot. They were like the most popular group. But the biggest selling comic book of the 90s was when DC decided to kill off Superman. That was like a huge thing. So the way she's holding him in that city reminded me of Death of Superman, like right off the bat. And it was like, it was so similar. I'm sure it was like some kind of homage or something just to the times, because that happened like around 95 or 94. So kind of when this show was up and running, but I did notice that. As far as like, obviously we know Cable's going to have probably going to have an impact going forward, but my question, and Frank, throw to you first, how soon do you think we'll see Gambit return? Because in my mind, like, I think he needs to stay dead for a while for the stakes to kind of really, for us to feel it. Like, I'm saying, like, I don't think he should be back until maybe next season or the season finale at the earliest. What do you think?
I think you see versions of Gambit in later episodes this season of, like, Cable. I think we get a perspective episode of Cable this season.
Okay.
Whether it's episode 9 or the finale, I think you get versions of these people who died in this episode alive and dying again in like a kind of like a butterfly effect and repeat. But I don't think we fully get Gambit alive prior to next season. That'll be my guess.
Marcy, I think you want to see Gambit return, but what about, like, I'll turn the other way. Do you think he should stay dead? So what you felt from this cartoon, like, it really is going to stick with you, you know, longer if he does, like, if we don't see the character again. What do you think about that? I mean, obviously you want him to come back, but, like, what if he doesn't come back?
No, I completely agree, because now you've got Rogue, who is just so hurt by not only Gambit dying, but she thinks Magneto is dead or, you know, mortally wounded. She knows he's gone probably too, so she's pissed about that. She's not going to be pissed about Gambit. She's going to have all of those feelings. Cyclops is going to have feelings that Madeline was vaporized. Like, what is that going to do to him? So I think that's really going to galvanize not only the X-Men, but also, like, hopefully it's going to move just like the regular humans to be like, oh, like, shit, that's really messed up. Like, maybe we should not be such assholes to the mutants because they've suffered this loss. So should he stay dead? Probably, yeah, it's probably going to really make the X-Men, like, more resolute to kick some ass, but would definitely love to see him again. But I totally understand that perspective of we need to feel the feelings.
Yeah, and I mean, we talked about this before. In comics, no character stays dead except for Uncle Ben, I think, from Spider-Man, but everyone else returns in some form or fashion. Brittany, what do you think? Same question. Do you think Gambit should return? Will his return kind of undercut his death?
You know, I'm a little torn. I feel like the reason that Cable was even brought into this episode is because he serves a greater purpose beyond his little cameo here. And I think with that being said, I feel we're going to get Gambit. At least I hope Gambit will come back. It would kind of undermine the death because he died believing that Rogue didn't choose him. Like, oh my God, that was so devastating. Like, this whole thing was just, it just messed with you. But I will give it to Gambit, though. Talk about a mature man to accept that from Rogue, the woman that he loves, and just be so graceful about it. And he still protected her all the way to the very end. Like, that is, man, I love him. For that reason, I need him to come back. I'm sorry, Christian. Am I not correct in saying man? Please don't yell at me. You know, just this beautiful specimen. Okay, let me put it that way. Who protected the woman that he loved, whom he believed didn't choose him, whom he believed chose Magneto. And like, that was just, it's poetry, but it hurts so bad. So yeah, I think he'll come back. I don't know how soon. Otherwise, it's pointless to bring in Cable. And yeah. Okay, so Christian here in the chat. By the way, shout out to King B. Johnson and Christian of McDorks here in the chat today. We appreciate y'all being here. LOL, I'm saying like he was a man. Yes, he is. So that being said, that is my rant. And scene.
So, Frank, what I want to know is, we know that Gambit's dead. We know others are possibly dead too. But why? And who is behind these quote-unquote Godzilla Sentinels, or the Godzilla Sentinel, as Gambit termed them? You know, they're these three-headed massive Sentinels. And do you think it's the same person who Cable, when Cable meets his mother, Madeline Pryor, who also made her return in this episode, Cable tells his mom he's coming. So who is the he's referring to? And does he mean he's the person who's behind the Sentinels? What do you think, Frank?
I think it's Apocalypse. Mm-hmm. I think Apocalypse is a long lost. He said it too. Midor said it as well. I think it's Apocalypse. Yeah. I think because, like, in the comic books and in the show's history, Cable's like ultimate like arch enemy is Apocalypse. That's the guy that he's like. There's simpatico. That's like the yin to the yang that stirs the drink. And now my question: the connection of the Sentinels and Apocalypse is kind of weird because that's more of like a human creation of we hate mutants, so we want to create. But at the same time, the technology of this Sentinel is so robust. I've never seen anything like it in any publication. It's more robust and more powerful than Mega. I forgot the Sentinel's name in the main time.
Megamold.
Yeah, it's more like it has three heads. As it's way bigger than Mega Mold, and it's vaporizing mutants. Like in every other publication or cartoon, I don't recall a Sentinel being that powerful to like vaporize mutants by the droves like that. They've slowed down mutants. They've shot mutants out of the sky. They've like hurt mutants, but like they're killing powerful mutants by the droves in this episode. So I think Apocalypse is behind this. I do.
I do want to point out in the opening, the character introductions, there is a scene that shows Cable fighting Apocalypse, and that's from the original series, but that's got to be a hint to something, I would think.
Yes.
We have not seen Apocalypse yet in this series.
And the show does a great job of not wasting characters in the intro just for no reason. Like, for example, X-Factor. I mentioned X-Factor like 2 weeks ago, and like we already saw were four members of X-Factor, because Cable's a member of X-Factor. We saw multiple men in this episode as well.
Yeah.
We saw Forge the week before last. So they're doing a good job of like showing hints. You saw the Hellfire's Club in that same introduction. You saw Sebastian Shaw. You saw Emma Frost in this episode. So they're not wasting character intros in this introduction for no reason. There's a reason behind that for sure.
Yeah, and Frank, you mentioned multiple man. I want to stick with you for a second because you're going to know better than any of us. Who are some of the Easter egg characters that you noticed that were just like kind of thrown in there to be like, oh, I know who that is. You know, people, big time fans are like, oh, awesome. We're finally seeing this character brought to screen.
Yeah. So the scene at the, I guess the mutant council where they're deciding who to make the leader of Genosha, you see Banshee who's sitting right next to Moira MacTaggert. Banshee and Moira together. Like after Professor X and Moira MacTaggert broke up, Banshee became Moira's love interest. He's on a council. You saw Sebastian Shaw, who was sitting next to, I think, Emma Frost. He's on the council. He's from the Hellfather Club. Earlier in the episode, you saw like this pink waxy figure with a clear skeleton. His name is Herman. I can't remember his first name, but his power, he's a minor character in the comic books, but his power is that his body's full of wax and like he has superhuman strength, he can manipulate his body. He can put his body on fire and uses himself as a human fireball. You saw Dazzler.
Glob Herman. I looked it up.
Yeah. Grog, there you go. Who else? There was a few. I wrote them down in my notes. Kalisto, of course. But those are the main ones that I saw. Azale, Nightcrawler's dad. He was in First Class, the purple Nightcrawler looking character from X-Men.
You're not talking about Azazel.
Azazel was in it too. Azazel was dancing at the gala. That's Nightcrawler's father. he was in it as well.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I knew you would notice characters that I didn't notice. I had to get your take on that real quick. Another Easter egg character, Brittany, I want to throw this to you, is Bo DiMaio himself. Did you notice that?
You know, not on the first watch. Mm-hmm. It wasn't until Twitter. I have a love-hate relationship with Twitter, but that night was a love relationship with Twitter because not only was Bo answering tweets, but he did confirm that they wrote him, or not wrote him, but they added him to the scene of this episode. And it's really tough. Again, for all that we collectively have experienced in the last, you know, 30 something years since the show had ended, so much is going on. And so to put yourself into the show when such a catastrophic event is occurring, I mean, that's heavy. That's extremely heavy. And I did appreciate that they did include him in it because he's the showrunner. He's the creator. He wrote the episode. He wrote this whole season. So, you know, it's really cool when they can kind of give a nod to the creator like that.
Yeah, no, that was very cool. And Frank had to leave us, but we appreciate his knowledge and his input in today's episode. So thanks for joining us again, Frank. We appreciate it. Marcy, I want to throw to you because a big part of this episode, not only did we get the death, but we got a lot of action, and we'll talk about the action, but we also got just a ton of soap opera-esque love stories and triangles. And so I'm going to throw this question to you. Like, which one do you want to talk about first? Jean and Scott, Jean and Logan, Scott and Madeline, Rogue and Gambit, Magneto and Rogue. I mean, there's five.
Magneto options. And Gambit. No, I'm just kidding. Could have been one.
So which one do you want to start off first and just kind of take it from there?
Wow. Okay. Let's start at the beginning, but I don't want to forget about the whole Rogue talking about like her background with Magneto, because he had like this great, I guess, like shirt, but it was like open and you could like see half of his chest. So we'll go back to that. But let's start at the beginning with Jean and Wolverine, and then Jean and Scott, and just kind of her audacity, which was amazing because, you know, she's all confused and trying to like make sense of her memories in the water or whatever, you know, just I can relate because, you know, sometimes you're in the shower and you're like, you know, got all of your delusional thoughts, right? But then like Wolverine is there and she's just kind of like, okay, like I need some support. I'm so confused. And, you know, he's talking to her because he cares about her and he's a friend. And then they kiss. And of course, Wolverine is like, you know what? Like, this isn't meant to be. Like, you're supposed to be with Scott. Like, this was just like a momentary lapse in judgment. So again, kudos to him. Not only do we give kudos to Gambit for being very adult about the whole Rogue situation, we give kudos to Wolverine because he could have totally taken advantage of that situation. But then Jean is with Scott and trying to like connect and like, tell me about your son and blah, blah, blah. And then she's like, wait, you are still connecting telepathically with Madeline? How dare you? Like, I loved her audacity of being able to be like, not only did I just kiss Wolverine and didn't even tell Scott about it, now I'm getting mad at him for talking to his baby mama, ex-girlfriend, my clone. I'm so confused by. So that was great. And then, of course, he turns it right back on her and he's like, well, you know, like, are you sure you love me or am I just like a happy memory or pleasant memory or something that he said? But of course, he hit her with like the age old, I love both of you type of thing. So no, Scott, stop gaslighting us. Pick one. Make up your mind.
In fairness, one is a clone of the other. Like, they're very similar.
Yes, but also, no, I don't know. That was great. It was very soap opera, like lines and dialogue to where it was cheesy, but it knew it was cheesy and then it made fun of itself for being cheesy. And I loved that level of self-awareness from the show.
Yeah. And also in fairness to Scott and Brittany, then I'll let you take over. But I just want to mention, come on. After Scott sold the Goblin Queen, that's a game changer. I don't care. Like, honestly, he should have said, you know what, Gene, Exhibit A, the Goblet Queen. I rest my case. Brittany, take over.
I'm just so disappointed in you, Justin. Good Lord. You cannot have your cake and eat it too. My God. Like, you just cannot.
It's the same cake. Like,
Gene was trying to. Gene kissed Wolverine.
Hey. This is why they both needed to stick around. Like I said earlier in one of our other pods, Madeline could have stayed with Scott, Jean could have been with Wolverine. Everyone would have been happy. It would have been great. Yeah. I'm gonna highlight this comment from Christian. I'd rather be cheated on with myself than another. Okay. That's all we need to say.
Well,
same cake, just a different slice. Like, no, you know, like I get it. Hello to one of our new followers joining us in the live chat. Show me Stacker. Hey, thank you so much for joining. Feel free to comment about X-Men 97. How are you liking the show? What did you think of this episode? Let us know. This is such BS from Scott, like totally trying to gaslight her. Also, I agree with everything Mercy has said. The audacity of Jean Grey to be like, that was our thing, Scott. How could you do that with her? Nah, 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 nah. Like, bitch, shut up. Like, shut up. You were smooching Logan 5 seconds ago, and then you decide to intrude in Scott's mind. So, like,
and she initiated the kiss with Logan. He didn't kiss her. She kissed him.
Right. So it's like, I need you to pump the brakes. Take some accountability for your actions and chill the fuck out. So, yeah, but her just getting all mad at him, which is so typical of like a woman in a relationship or marriage to, you know, be like that. But then for him to equally flip it back on her, I'm like, you know what? This is why y'all are meant to be together. Y'all are both toxic. Like, this is why it works. Like, it is what it is. It's God, that was so dramatic. It truly, truly was. It made me laugh, honestly. Like, I've watched it several times since then, and every single time that it happened, it just totally made me laugh because it's just so silly and it's so stupid. And then boom, like Jean and Madeline have this connection that happens. And I think from what I've understood and have read is that was the moment when Madeline was vaporized and all of her memories transferred to Jean. That's okay. Why they both had the reaction the way that they did, basically.
That would make
sense. So it's sad. It's really sad, but man, that was an intense episode. So,
well, you know, I was surprised how quickly we got the return of Madeline Pryor, because, mm-hmm. you know, after the end of episode three, I was like, we probably won't see this character again this season, maybe not in the series ever again. She was going to go off on her own. Then we find out she's in Genosha and she's on the Genosha Council. I did like how there is a kind of an Easter egg for comic fans, because when Madeline is daydreaming or, you know, she's doing her telepathic communicating with Scott, she catches herself at the meeting and she's like, sorry, my mind just drifted. And Emma Frost is there, and Emma Frost goes, mind drift indeed. And in the comics, Emma Frost hooks up with Scott and they also have a telepathic thing going on. So that's very intentional. So
Scott, what a douchebag.
So anyway, I did enjoy that kind of stuff.
Of course you did.
I thought this was great. I mean, I think this episode, I didn't mention this, but this was like 36 minutes, which is the longest episode of the season. But like, they fit so much into that 36 minutes. It's just bam, 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 bam. Like, there's like 15 topics we could talk about. But I definitely think the love stuff, the soap opera-y kind of stuff, is very interesting. And that transitions us to the other big triangle, and that's Magneto. Well, Gambit, Rogue, and of course Magneto. Marcy, what are your thoughts on how these characters were intertwined and how that played out?
That was a cinematic masterpiece. It reminded me of Casablanca a little bit, because Rogue's got to make up her mind between Magneto and Gambit, and she's conflicted. And even like the whole back, you know, the flashback to where she and Magneto are kind of going through their love affair or whatever. Again, you see them like having dinner and Magneto's like wearing this brown shirt. You could see half of his chest. I was like, I didn't notice that the first time I watched it, but I was like, Magneto, like, you were just kind of lady killer vibes, like right here. Like, what is this? This is so romantic. And then you hear Rogue talking about just how conflicted she is, right? Like, she can touch Magneto, like his magnetism is able to like repel her and not like be affected by it, and right. All she wants is to be able to do the same with Gambit, and she's not able to, and that's why she feels conflicted. She's like, you love me and I'm this great thing to you, but like I can't even touch you, and like it has to be about that. So we feel like she's going to make a decision when Magneto's like, I want you to be, I guess, like my first lady type of situation. And she shows up in that dress and you've got the music and they do this dance. And we're like, wow, this is amazing. But then she's like, I can't do it. So yeah, hard choice for a Rogue. And now she seemingly is without both of them. So now, how does she go on? How does she recover from that? Do we see just kind of Rogue go rogue and just try to get some revenge on her two lost lovers at this point?
Yeah, it'll be really interesting to see what Rogue does for the rest of the season and going forward.
Was anyone else fearful of Rogue after it seemed that Magneto was, you know, well, Frank pointed out, neutralized, not eliminated, right? But the sheer ferocity that was in Rogue after having been clamored down through Magneto's powers, you know, in order to keep her and Gambit safe, but how she broke free of that cage, if you will, or that protective ball. Holy shit. I was fearful. I'm like, oh, you done up, like you about to feel the wrath of a scorned woman, and that's not fun. But you know, the triangle that is Gambit, Rogue, and Magneto, we've seen that Gambit has seen it. You know, he doesn't like it. Obviously, he's wanted just to be with Rogue, and when she finally tells him that it has to be more than, you know. Or how did Gambit say it? There's some things that are more important than skin deep or something like that.
Right.
And she first argues that, and he's like, then we'll just be friends. You know, we be friends. And it's just like, Gambit, no, I'll be more than a friend with you. Like, that's how I was right there. I'm here to, you know, pick up the pieces and what have you. But the fact that they showed or wrote Gambit to be mature and accept that defeat, if you will, I guess you could call it defeat, and still be there regardless. Now, granted, he had his limits. He could not watch the dance between Magneto and Rogue at that ball or whatever you want to call that.
Yeah.
And he had to walk away. He had to walk away. By the way, seeing him with the long hair, the white suit, that's a vibe. That's a vibe right there. Like, how will I survive when you've gone so far away? Like, I just, you know, I such a vibe.
Cajun Brittany might be my favorite Brittany. I don't know. Let's, let's hear some more of that. No, but you talked about the ball, and I want to, let's, and Marcy did too. Very sensual dance by Magneto and Rogue in front of a bunch of people. Let's talk about Rogue has her hair pulled up. She's in a red dress, and there's an Ace of Base song, which I was not familiar with. Now I have seen the sign and it opened up my eyes, but I've never heard this song from Ace of Base. But Brittany, I know it has a, you know, bring some nostalgic feelings back for you.
It does. I think I've already said it several times here on the pod and in past pods. I have older siblings. And while I was a child in the 90s, they were teenagers, early 20s in the 90s. And I distinctly remember my sister having the Ace of Base cassette of the album, The Sign, and the song Happy Nation, which we heard in this episode during the dance between Magneto and Rogue at the ball, was played. When I tell you how mind blown I was hearing the lead into that song, into that chorus, my inner 90s child blew up. Good God. Like, it glowed. I was singing along with it, because when you listen to the lyrics, happy nation, living in a happy nation, where the people understand, or maybe not understand, but they dream of a perfect man. In this case, Magneto is being asked to lead Genosha. Yeah. And there's people who are not quite supportive of that. The lyrics, situation leading to a sweet salvation, for the people, for the good, for mankind, brotherhood. And that's always like been the mission of like Charles Xavier. There's also a line later on where the man will die, but not his ideas. And that is so appropriate for everything that Charles Xavier has been trying to do. And then Magneto in his own respect too. They just have different paths to kind of ultimately maybe get to the same sort of point in life. But it's such a perfect song to use in this episode, and I was just living for it. Oh my God. Christian, yes, you're with me too. Your sister had the song, it had the cassette or had the album as well. It's such a good song. I love that song. I was jamming it like nonstop after this episode aired.
So Brittany, are you trying to say the members of Ace of Base are mutants? Is that what you're trying to break on this podcast?
I mean, I think they're Swedish. They're Swiss. I don't know. I mean,
so they have to have some kind of superpower if they're Swedish, right?
Okay. I don't know. I mean, for them to, you know, have had that song around since the 90s, they're Swedish, by the way. Yeah. And for Bo DiMaio to keep that song in mind and then use it for this episode is just like, it's just perfection. Like, mwah, chef's kiss. You cannot have planned it better than that.
Right. And Marcy, so Magneto's plan, so the Genosian Council, they're going to make him their ruler. However, he wants one provision where that, you know, Rogue is a member of the X-Men. She's a popular member of the X-Men. The X-Men are very popular amongst the mutant kind. And he wants to make her his queen to like rule beside him. It certainly seems like that ball and that dance is like a coronation of their future relationship. What did you think about the dance and just how that all played out? Like, would you dance with somebody like that, like in midair, or like what are we talking about here?
I mean, I guess if I could, right? Like, if I had those powers, maybe. maybe when you're into it that much, it feels like you're dancing on air. I really don't know. It's been a while since I wanted to dance like that with someone, I guess. But no, it was just, it was so good because it was so 90s. Like, it went so well with the music, with the vibe, Happy Nation, but it wasn't a Happy Nation because there's all this other shit going on. It's not a Happy Nation for Gambit. It's not a Happy Nation for Rogue, who's conflicted about what she's going to do. It's not a Happy Nation for Madeline and, you know, everybody else. So it was just so great because you've got this song. It's like, yes, Happy Nation, everything's great and everything's going to be amazing. And no, it's not, like, sadly mistaken. But it was just so good. It, like I said, it was so 90s. It reminded me of probably like other cartoon, like animated films that I probably saw in the 90s that were like very girly and probably had like people dancing on air. No, it was great. And it kind of makes you think like, okay, yeah, she's going to say yes to Magneto. But at the end, she's like, nope, couldn't do it. So yeah, that was way to go, Rogue, I guess, letting him down easy, letting him dance and then being like, yeah, you know, sorry, I can't do this.
Yeah, you know, sticking with the music in this episode, really for this whole series, whether it's like pop songs or the score or the you know, classic animated theme, they've done a really good job with the music, and it's by the Newton Brothers, who I'm not familiar with. But I want to say that the end of this episode, after Gambit dies in Rogue's arms, and they play a very sad piano version of the X-Men animated theme. Did y'all pick up on, did y'all listen to that? That was like really powerful, especially to end the episode the way they did. And then like to kind of pull on your heartstrings with the song. Like the song is often played in the show is like when there's an action scene or a fight scene or whatever, they play it like as like a hype moment. And then to play the sad piano version as Gambit dies was pretty, pretty well done. What do you think, Brittany?
I mean, this show just hit it. It's 5 for 5. And what helps is the music choice or choices. Like, it's music is used to convey feeling, right? To kind of help you in the event that you're just unsure of what's going on or how to feel. The music will set that tone, obviously. Right. And so when you hear that, you hear the theme, the instrumental version of, or the piano version of the X-Men theme song, and you realize like, wow, one of our beloved X-Men is gone. Like, that's, I keep using the word disheartening, or, you know, the feeling of distraught. Like, that's, that was what I was feeling. I'm like, there's no fucking way. Like, I was sitting there, hand over my mouth. I'm like, there's no way. There is no way whatsoever. And it's really, Show Me Stacker says it very well here. Very emotional episode, gut punch right after such a hopeful beginning.
Yeah.
And that's beautifully said. I couldn't have said it better.
Not only that, but it's a gut punch after, you know, you see Gambit, he's got the white tuxedo still on, he's got his bow staff, he's on a motorcycle, tremendous action with him and Rogue, and they're fighting off people, he's saving Morlocks, you know, these Morlocks think they're for sure dead, and he comes in for the save, and then of course the way he dies, and of course as he's, when he dies, he says like one of his, you know, kind of famous sayings of, you know, the name's Gambit, remember it, and that's what the title is drawing off of. I thought that was it was definitely a gut punch. This episode was really like brought you to your knees, you know.
And remember it, we shall. Like that,
yeah,
that great episode alone has made a lasting impression on me. Like, I was at work the next day still thinking about that episode. I'm like, this has me fucked up real bad. Like, and from an animation, like, who does that? No one. So yeah, it's just a well-crafted episode from start to finish because it is hopeful. You get that story development and then you get that plot twist of, oh no, something's happening. And then it's just complete chaos afterwards.
I want to touch on kind of a lower level theme of the show or storyline is the TV news, like behind the scenes, like story that's being, that, you know, the X-Men are being interviewed at the mansion, which I'm not sure who, like what PR person okayed this or thought it was a good idea. But Marcy, let's talk about it here. We have, I mean, the highlight of the behind the scene TV news story is Scott is being interviewed by reporter Trish Tilby, and she asks him about Jean and about their son, Nathan. And he explains, like, you know, we don't have a son. I don't have a son with Jean. That's, you know, and then of course he doesn't explain that he has a son with Jean's twin, or not twin, her clone. He just lets it kind of lay there. And then she's like, oh, why do you lie? And then he just like loses.
Cause he abandoned his child, that piece of shit.
So Marcy, what are your thoughts on the whole, we see Scott kind of, he's the Boy Scout, but the Boy Scout kind of blows his top in this episode.
Yeah, that was so intrusive.
Yeah.
Because, you know, he's like, no, we don't have a child. She's like, but I saw records of a child being born on this day, Nathan Summers, and it lists you as his parent and a doctor, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, ma'am, who is giving you these hospital records? Like, this should not be allowed. How did you see these hospital records? I guess it's because they're mutants. Like, nobody gives a shit. Like, let's HIPAA violations all over the place. So, yes, you have to, like, not, you have to dislike her because it's so intrusive. And I love how he just talked about, like, yes, like, humans suck and, like, we're pretty much doing you a favor by not killing you. Like,
yeah.
So I thought his reaction was actually like spot on. Cause it's like, he's going through a lot. Like, we can hate Scott for other things, but he's going through a lot. Just being like, oh, like, I thought you had a kid. Like, oh, what happened to your kid? Oh, your kid died. Your kid went somewhere. So yeah, that reporter didn't like her. But, you know, she made the Beast blush. So that was, like, I guess, like a highlight. I guess he got his little 15 minutes.
Beast has been very underserved so far through 5 episodes. And you know who is second most on that list is probably Wolverine, which I think is very interesting because Wolverine is by far the most popular X-Men. And I think it's right that he doesn't have as much spotlight because he doesn't really need it. And I'm sure he's going to get it at some point. I think they've done a really good job with how they've managed the characters, but I would like to see more with Beast, and hopefully we'll get that going forward. But yeah, Trish, after finding, you know, she knows that Scott has a son. She doesn't know who the mother is. And she's like, why do you lie? And he's like, you know, he says all the stuff. He's like, I lie because the truth is that we're nothing like you. And thank God, because the only reason you people are still alive. And he storms off. He's like, you know, basically we save your ass every turn. You're ungrateful. I did think it was interesting when Trish referred to Jean as Marvel Girl, which I had not heard. I looked it up, and it's an older moniker for Jean. However, it's currently there's another character that goes by Marvel Girl in the X-Men comics. But I did notice that Easter egg. I'm like, I've never heard her referred to as Marvel Girl. You know, there's a lot of, there's Captain Marvel, there's Miss Marvel, there's who knows what else Marvel, but I learned something. So, you know, the more, you know, Brittany, kind of moving on here with some other things that kind of were kind of not Easter eggy, but like, what'd you think about Nightcrawler? He was only in a few episodes of the original series toward the end. Mm-hmm. We see him come back. He is the brother of, or half brother, I guess, of Rogue. So I thought it was interesting that we see him kind of see Rogue and Gambit first, but what'd you think about a Nightcrawler? And for a second there, I thought he was dead.
Yeah, it really did seem like the end of Nightcrawler. And that, you know, for Rogue to approach him and kind of remember, okay, I can't, you know, I can't touch him. And then here comes Gambit, save the day, and check to see if he's alive and whatnot. And, you know, he does come to. I love seeing Nightcrawler. He actually is one of my favorite characters in X-Men. He got some bars, man. He had some amazing things to say to Gambit when they're taking in Genosha. And of course, I got to stop real quick and talk about the price for apples. My God, $10. No, thank you. I'm okay. Obviously, they haven't been able to trade with other countries, hence, you know, price hacking, whatever you want to call that. But that was insane. I'm like, no, thank you. No, thank you. But going back to Nightcrawler, he really had some great lines to give to Gambit. And Gambit says, what is it about settling down? You know, that's for some, but not for him. You know, he's not going to get the white picket fence because of reasons and, you know, something about sinning and things like that. And Nightcrawler is just like, you know, what is love without sin? And
it's there is no like, love without
sin. There is no love without sin. Thank yeah. you. And it's just like, oh, like, yes. Like that is, I don't know. It's just so good. I was really happy to see him. I'm actually trying to pull up some quotes from the episode, and I'm kind of struggling at the moment. But yeah, he talks some sense into Gambit, you know. And then I hated the idea that we get to see this character and then potentially he's gonna be killed off, and it's just like no. But yeah, hopefully he sticks around for a little while longer.
Yeah, he has a bigger run in the movies than he ever did in the animated series. Like I said, he was in the 5 seasons of the OG series. I think he's like in 2 or 3 episodes total. And I think they're season 4 and maybe one in season 5. So he doesn't play a huge role in the series. It was good to see him. He's a very religious character, especially in the OG series. So he talks a lot about God. So I'm glad there wasn't a ton of that in this episode. It kind of keeps it moving, but no, it was fun to see him. And obviously he has a cool power. It's good that he did, you know, it's good that we didn't lose every mutant in this episode. Just noticing some other stuff to talk about. Marcy, what did you think about the fact that in Genosha, we have these giant statues of both, Magneto and Charles, and neither one of those statues make it out intact.
No, it was great. And then whenever they're arriving, you could see like they're holding up signs, and like one of the signs was just like, "You are right, Magneto." And I was like, that's just like the most bland sign. Like, "You are right, Magneto." Like, yeah, it does. It seems like a utopia, but then when you look beyond the surface, like at all utopias, it's not perfect. And you do see that it's like, is this kind of cultish? Like, why do we have these statues? What is the purpose that they were formally like recognizing Genosha? Are there like ulterior motives? Who is behind these attacks? Because we definitely know that the regular human countries don't want this nation to succeed, right? Because they hate mutants, because humans kind of suck. So yeah, I just would like to know more about the backstory of it all. But yeah, you are right, Magneto.
Yeah. Yeah. And speaking of wanting to know more, I want to know more about this Dr. Cooper character who we've seen in a couple episodes. And like we saw her in episode 2 when Storm loses her powers. We see her here in Genosha. And it seems like whenever she's around, bad stuff happens, but it doesn't seem to happen to her. So I wonder, is she a mutant in disguise, or what is her role in this story? I know there's a couple of funny moments with her where she walks up to Emma Frost and she's like, you know, we did talk about something. And she's like, oh, your dress? Like, she takes a shot at her clothes. And, you know, she has the line that kind of sets up Magneto. She's like, you know, most other nations don't allow a terrorist to be their leader. And Magneto fires back, yet so many allow their leaders to be terrorists. So Magneto gets the best lines. You just can't, go with that dude. He's got the best writers. He'll fire right back at you. He has no fear. Brittany, do you have any thoughts on this Dr. Cooper character and what you think she might be up to?
If she's not behind it solely, she's working with the person who is behind all these catastrophes that are occurring to the mutants. And, you know, it's kind of like what I think of Victoria Newman in The Boys. You know, she appears to be someone who is trying to fight for, you know, understanding and equality and this and that, what have you. But really, she's kind of being the puppet master in all of this, right? And has the nastiest powers, or some of the nastiest powers we've seen. So I kind of feel like with this Dr. Cooper, it's kind of, you know, maybe something similar. If not, she's just always in the wrong place at the wrong time, and sucks to be her.
Yeah. No, definitely. Frank's back in the chat, Brittany. You want to
listen? Yeah, he is.
Yeah.
Yeah, he says, it's crazy to me how Magneto is such a figurehead in Genosha, but you haven't seen his daughter, Polaris, or his son, Quicksilver, yet. I Frank, you're the expert here. You're the one that's supposed to educate us on all this stuff. I got nothing.
We do see Quicksilver in the OG series briefly, yeah, along with Wanda. So I wonder, you know, are we going to see Wanda Maximoff, who I don't think she's still his daughter in the comics, but she was at that time. So, you know, honestly, the X-Men have so many like parental issues and like relationship stuff. It's, I mean, like, for example, Rogue's mother is Mystique, I believe. And then her half brother is Kurt Wagner, AKA Nightcrawler. But then,
yeah, because I think Mystique and Azazel are Nightcrawler's parents. That's right. Why he has the powers that he does, and why, right, he appears to look more like Mystique than.
But we
than
haven't
not.
Seen Mystique, I don't think, except we see her in the opening credits. They show her.
Yeah.
But that, yeah, we haven't really seen that character, I don't believe. And or, mm-hmm, maybe Morph turned into her in one of the episodes. It's honestly hard to kind of keep up with. But
lots of Greek mythology vibes with all the parental issues that the X-Men.
Both Greek and Roman. Good Lord.
Yeah. It's more like you need a chart to, like, you know, like a family tree on the screen to kind of guide
you through.
That's
a forest, dude.
Yeah. Yeah. Who? There you go.
It's a freaking forest.
Who is his mom and who's his dad? Yeah. It's hard to keep up with.
Yeah.
I wanted to point out a couple little other things in the episode. We talked about the Watcher. I talked about the Watcher earlier. Brittany, it's not clear if this is the same Watcher from What If, but if you would kind of give people a little idea of who the Watcher is.
I'm just going to tell everyone to go watch What If. That show is great, and it's not going to disappoint, yeah, you. Season 2 was fire, like fire compared to season 1. Season 1's great, yeah, don't get me wrong, but the Watcher is a big character. I mean that literally and figuratively. He's
basically watches over the multiverse.
He does. He does. Yeah. And when shit's about to go down, he's there to watch it. Not to interrupt what's happening, right, but he's just there to watch stuff go down. And it's like you blink and it's gone. And so where he appears is just before we start seeing the big party and such. It's like a shot of the night sky after Rogue and Gambit have like their little falling out, if you will. So it's just a big shot of the night sky, and you see him in the left of that screen or that scene. And it's very low opacity. You can kind of make out the silhouette a little, but yeah, you blink and he's gone. So it was really cool. There's really no real like tie in to anything, and I'm trying to find my screenshot from when Bo DiMaio was answering, you know, questions about, yeah, specifically that. And so someone says seeing the Watcher there does make the scene feel like it's a What If situation too, though. And so Bo said, no, it's not. So in other words, they're not directly connected or anything like that, but it's just kind of like a nod, I guess you could say.
Well, I think the reason why the Watcher is there is because it's a big moment. I think it's a Nexus moment in the multiverse. It's a moment that probably happens many times, and he's there to observe it. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, it's no coincidence that we see him in the sky as the fireworks are popping off, and then, you know, minutes later, the Sentinels are attacking, and, you know, Cable comes in right before and says, "Oh, it's, you know, it's happening again. I'm sorry, I can't stop it." So it's obviously something that happens over and over throughout the multiverse. Yeah. And that's why the Watcher is there. I just thought it was cool because even though it doesn't look like the same Watcher that we saw in What If, who's voiced by Jeffrey Wright, I like to think that it could be a way to connect. I mean, obviously everything in Marvel is a part of the multiverse, but it is kind of a way that maybe connects the MCU, and maybe down the line we get the X-Men 97 characters in the What If animated series, or, you know, vice versa. So no, you don't want to see that?
No, I'd rather keep it separate, truthfully. I don't feel like everything needs to be interconnected just because.
No, I mean, not like it's, but think about, like, what if isn't like, it's not really canon per se, right? It's just like,
true.
It's like what if stories that are just kind of fun, almost like one-off self-contained things. So I don't know. I think it's interesting.
Yeah. I will say, because you mentioned Cable again, that it was cool that, okay, so let me back up. Gambit, the voice of Gambit in this season, is not the original voice actor from the OG. They got someone else. I think he does a fabulous job. I love the Cajun accent whatsoever. However, they did bring in the OG voice actor of Gambit to play Cable, which I thought that was like just really, really cool. Like a cool way to pass on the torch, if you will. So yeah, if y'all didn't know about that, now you do.
Well, also the original voice actor who played Jean Grey in the OG series, she voices the Dr. Cooper character.
Ah, so
that's in, because, you know, Dr. Cooper obviously is an older character than Jean Grey is. So I do like how they kind of kept these people who were a part of it, you know, either in the same roles or kind of kept them in the universe, and they got to, you know, continue to get a check for working on this these shows.
Royalties.
Yeah. I think we kind of hit a little bit of everything. Marcy, is there anything we didn't touch upon that you want to talk about from this episode?
No, I think we hit it all. It was great. There was a lot, and I'm excited to see what happens in the next episodes, because we still have to see Storm has to come back. We have to see what happens with that. So there's a lot that needs to be wrapped up. We need to figure out like who was behind this attack, what the fallout will be. So no, I'm excited for whenever it comes back.
Yeah. Brittany, any like final thoughts on this excellent episode of television?
You know, if y'all thought that this episode was a 10 out of 10, apparently this ain't even half of it, according to Bo DiMaio. Yeah. He says episodes 8 through 10 are just going to be straight fire. And I am both excited and terrified as to what is going to happen, because this episode alone left me in shambles, and I don't know if I'm mentally and emotionally prepared for episodes 8 through 10. So yeah, this episode has really set the tone. I think it's also going to be stellar all the way to the very end.
Yeah, no, I agree. And like I said earlier, this could have been the season finale or the series finale. This is only the midway point of this season. We know we're getting a season 2. We're probably going to get a season 3. If this show can keep this up, this is going to be like a legendary season of television, because like Frank said, like it's 10 out of 10 every week. And honestly, like this one is like 11 out of 10. That doesn't even make sense, but like that's the truth. Yeah. We got a question from Show Me Stacker. Is this the first mention of Omega level in the animated series? I believe so. Like Omega level threat, I guess is what you're asking. I think so. There is a character Omega Red who is in the original series quite often. So, but I do believe, yeah, Omega level threat. I think this is the first mention.
Yeah.
And you know, honestly, Frank could answer this question better than I could. I'm not even sure which X-Men are Omega level threats. I think
it's like Magneto. No, like Magneto, Jean Grey.
I think it might be Cyclops too, because I think Cyclops is very powerful. Like Frank was talking about that one time.
Yeah, he's just a bitch. Sorry.
I mean, you know, the guy has a weakness for clones. Okay. Like who among us has not fallen for a clone? Okay. Like,
not I. Yeah, so I'm looking at quickly about Omega level mutants, and I do not see Cyclops nor Scott Summers listed on here. Okay. But it does say Magneto, Marvel Girl, I got some other Storm. Storm's another one. And a few others that I'm not going to name just in the event that we get to see them. So, you know, there's that.
Fair point.
Oh,
fair
so. Point. Oh, good point. Show me Stacker. Oh, wait, Storm in the first episode was called Omega Level, maybe. That's true. We might have to go back and rewatch, but I think for sure the title or the sort of threat level has been identified as such.
Right. Basically letting you know that these are powerful, powerful characters, powerful beings in the Marvel Universe. So
I want to be Omega Level. Well, I don't know what, but I want to be.
Yeah, well, it might not be the best thing for the rest of us if you were. So.
Well.
So that about does it for our review of the episode, but we've got a little bit more to talk about. I've got a couple of Marvel-related news items to hit on before we get out of here. First thing, and Brittany, I know you've already taken advantage of this partnership, but Marvel and Coca-Cola have come together. They have a new commercial that's out. And yes, as Brittany is showing off there, she has the Daredevil can because Marvel characters, 38 of them, in fact, will be featured on Coca-Cola bottles and cans for the foreseeable future. They also have a really cool commercial out. And I'm going to post that commercial, a YouTube link in our chat. You can check that out after the show. Brittany, I think you've watched it. I don't know if Marcy got a chance to check it out before the podcast. I think it's a really cool commercial.
It's a really cool commercial.
I think it's the kind of commercial that we're going to see in the theaters this summer before movies. It's about a minute and a half, and it features Marvel. It's this person's working in this comic book store. The characters literally come to life from posters and shirts and comic books. And and it's all, they're all trying to get a Coke for the person who's working at the comic store. Brittany, what'd you think about the commercial?
I think it was cool. I think it was cool how they were able to incorporate a lot of these Marvel characters. A lot of whom are, I think, some fan favorites. Of course, we've got a couple of X-Men characters that are incorporated. And I don't want to say too much just because I do want people to go and check out that link. It's a very short commercial. It's like, I don't know, what, 2 minutes, 2.5 minutes? It's
like a minute and a half, yeah.
Or a minute 45, yeah. So yeah, it's not long. It's cute, it's entertaining. I think it's fun. And because of the fact that it does include the character that's on my Coca-Cola can, if you're watching here on YouTube, and that is Daredevil. I was so lucky when I was able to get this can when I went to go have lunch with John the other day. And, you know, usually you get like your fountain drink from the dispenser. And that day they're like, oh, we only have cans. It's like, oh, okay, cool. I was about to give it back. And then I realized what was on the can. I'm like, excuse me, this might sound weird, but can I have that can? And she's like, sure. So yeah, I definitely had to keep it. So
Omega Level collectible right there.
There we go. Exactly. Oh, hey, Yesenia is joining us in the chat. Appreciate you being here. She says she got the Wolverine bottle. That is very, very cool. She said she was really excited about that. So, yeah, I mean, I haven't seen these two. I haven't seen them out, but John said when we went grocery shopping the other day that there were the 12 pack already on the shelves, which, again, I'm like, grocery store in and out. I don't want to linger. I don't want to like look at anything else. I hate grocery shopping. So, but yeah, but if y'all can get your hands on them, we'd love to see your photos of what you got. So be sure you're following us on our social media, which I'll do that tag out in a little bit, but yeah, definitely follow us there. Share with us what you have found.
Yeah. We want to know. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I just want to know, do they have one of Gambit and the crop top?
Listen.
Because if they don't, that is a missed opportunity.
I agree with you. I don't believe, no.
Dang it.
Damn it.
So besides that one, Marcy, which character would you like to have a Coke bottle or Coke can with the character on it?
Good question. Probably Magneto and all of his like chest bearing like lady killer glory. You know, a Jean Grey and a Madeline, and see if you can tell which one is which. Like Scott probably wouldn't be able to do that. So yeah, like all of those would be interesting.
Yeah. No, there's a lot, like I said, 38 characters are a part of it. Including like Negasonic Teenage Warhead, which if you've seen the Deadpool movies, that character is a part of those films. However, yeah, it is interesting to note that, you know, Spider-Man, who's the most popular Marvel character of them all, is not among the 38. Neither are the Fantastic Four. So I guess those characters have other like soda deals or something, because I'm not sure why you wouldn't have Spider-Man adorn a Coke. I think Spider-Man might have a deal with Dr. Pepper. Like, that's not a joke. I think Dr. Pepper does have a Spider-Man deal or something, but
interesting.
It's interesting which characters made it and which ones did not. But I'm hoping to get my hands on several of these, because like Brittany said, they are out in the wild. So go check them out at your local grocery store or convenience store or wherever they sell those fine bottled beverages. I know they have them for regular Coke and they have them for Coke Zero, but I'm not sure about Coke, yes, Vanilla Coke. Vanilla Coke is kind of like my thing, or Orange Coke, if they have Orange Vanilla Coke. Yeah.
Who are you? I was just going to ask, like, is this a bad time for me to have switched from regular Coke to Coke Zero? Cause like I've recently made that switch.
No, Coke Zero, you've got plenty of options. Black Panther, Ant-Man, Black Widow, Captain America, Captain Marvel, Doctor Strange, Groot, Hulk, Iron Man, Miss Marvel, She-Hulk, Rocket, Scarlet Witch, Shang-Chi, Star-Lord, and Thanos. So,
ooh, give me Doctor Strange.
Yeah.
Give me Doctor Strange. Yes.
A lot of options. But yeah, definitely check out that commercial. It features two X-Men characters among the five or six that are shown, which I think is very interesting, because for years Marvel wasn't able to use the X-Men as much because of the deal with 20th Century Fox. So I think it's kind of cool that they're capitalizing off the X-Men now during X-Men 97's run. So
excellent.
Next topic. And if you follow us on, if you're a subscriber to our YouTube channel, you probably already know about this question. But there was talk a few week or so ago, Robert Downey Jr. did an interview with Esquire magazine, and he said he'd happily return as Tony Stark / Iron Man. His quote is, "It's too integral a part of my DNA. That role chose me. And look, I will always say never, ever bet against Kevin Feige. It's a losing bet. He's the house. He will always win." So my question, and our question to all of you out there, do you want to see Robert Downey Jr. play Iron Man again? And Marcy, I'll throw it to you. I don't know how big of a fan you are of the MCU movies, but spoiler alert, Robert Downey Jr.'s character Iron Man / Tony Stark does not make it out of Endgame alive. However, we know with the multiverse and with comic books, everyone comes back. Do you want to see Robert Downey Jr. return as Tony Stark / Iron Man?
Yes, why not? I mean, I think part of his big career, like renaissance, is because of Iron Man, right? Like he was kind of big in the 90s. He had his personal troubles. I don't think he would have bounced back as big as he did if it wasn't for Marvel and Iron Man. So yeah, I mean, why not? Tom Cruise is still making like Mission Impossible 26, probably. Like, yes, why not? RDJ, come back.
Yeah. Brittany, what about you? Because we've talked about this before, and obviously his death is a perfect ending to the Infinity Saga. And we'll probably talk about that more very soon when we talk about the 5-year anniversary of Avengers Endgame, which is coming up next week. But what do you think? Is it worth kind of, maybe a little like tainting the death that happened in Endgame?
Yeah, I'm going to roll with that very unpopular opinion, because while I enjoy RDJ as Tony Stark, Iron Man, it's the same thing what we talked about earlier about Gambit. If he comes back because of Cable, you bring back Tony Stark, Iron Man at any capacity with the original actor, and it's just, it makes the death, it makes everything that they did moot, right? It loses the magic, it loses something. And I could see him maybe come back in various ways, like if he was, you know, the voice actor for his character in What If, let's say. They have a fantastic voice actor who is Tony Stark slash Iron Man in What If. But if they got RDJ to come back and actually voice his own character, cool. I'm great with that. I'm great with that. But if you're going to put him back in the timeline that he died in, I don't know. It kills me that that would be the way. And I know Iron Man is a moneymaker. I know that it's all about the almighty dollar. I get that. This is a business. But you're going to lose me and my respect if you do that. And not to mention, at this point, as Yesenia has pointed out, RDJ's got an Oscar now. Like, he's onto bigger, and I won't necessarily say better things, but he's onto bigger moves in his life. And I think having done Marvel for, 10 years of his life, it brought him back from what, Marcy was talking about, from his dark days in the 90s. It set him on the right path, and he is now a beloved, respected actor in Hollywood. So I feel like he is always going to love his time and have that respect for the role in Kevin Feige and company. I think he's maybe saying it just to appease people. I don't think he actually will come back, though.
Interesting.
So Brittany, I agree with your sentiment for the most part, but I will say, well, first off, Robert Downey Jr. didn't want his character to die in Endgame. He was pretty vocal. Reading the book that I read about how the MCU was kind of...
Yeah, made, I've heard about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he didn't want Tony Stark to be killed off. And so I do think he would like to return. I don't think that's just like lip service.
It's not so much like... But you have to consider of how they killed off the character, and then the flack that he could potentially get for coming back in that role, and then it's not meaningful anymore.
You know what? I understand where you're coming from, but I think we only live once. That doesn't mean Tony Stark, he can live more than once, right? We can bring him back, and I say do it. If he wants to do it, you're telling me that. How is that not going to be good? That's going to be a great movie. Iron Man 4, whatever.
Listen, Iron Man 3 was not good. Iron Man 3 was not good.
Iron Man 3 made over $1 billion, though.
It doesn't mean it was good.
That's good for Disney. They don't, yeah. I'd love to see him come back. I think, with comic books, it's all make-believe stuff. They can make it happen. If they have a great idea, I say go for it.
How about Iron Man and Fast and the Furious crossover just for Justin?
I mean,
because, at this point we'll have Iron Man 10. So, the whole Fast and Furious.
I mean, if that happens, the world wins. Everyone wins. That's a big win for everybody. So I would love to see it happen. But we want to know what you think about that. So let us know in our YouTube poll. Check that out. And, if you're subscribing, you probably already saw it, but if you haven't, hit the subscribe button and check out the poll. Let us know what you think. There we go. Yeah. Quarter mile in time. Thank you, King. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Oh, with nanotech also.
Yes, exactly.
The next news item I want to talk about briefly is the fact that Marvel has casted the Silver Surfer for the Fantastic Four movie. However, they're going in a different direction. Ozark star Julia Garner, who I'm not sure if y'all are familiar with. I do know who she is, but I did not watch Ozarks, and I don't know that I've seen a ton of stuff that she's been in, but she has been cast as a Silver Surfer. However, she's playing the female version of the character, Shala Ball, instead of the male version, Norrin Radd, who is the one that most people know as the Silver Surfer. Brittany, do you have any thoughts on the fact that they're kind of gender swapping this character?
I mean, I personally don't care. I'm not a huge Fantastic Four fan, so it's whatever to me. I mean, as long as they can make it work and as long as the performances are not going to suffer as a result of that, that's kind of really all that matters to me. Like, I don't care the gender swap. I don't care about ethnicity. I don't care about, what a person identifies as long as they can bring the performance out with the character. I couldn't care less. Truly could not care less.
Okay. Marcy, any thoughts on a female Silver Surfer?
Love female representation, like Brittany. Like, I don't care about the gender swapping. Remember seeing the Fantastic Four again, like 20 years ago when the movies came out. So, like, yep. It's fine. Interesting casting choice. I think she's a great actress. I've liked her and everything I've seen her in. Most of it has been like serious stuff. So it'll be interesting to see her in just kind of this type of role. She was in the Inventing Anna miniseries on Netflix where she played Anna Delvey. She was in Waco. She was in Dirty John. So she's been in some like pretty heavy stuff. So in addition, obviously, to Ozark. So, you know, she doesn't know shit about fuck. And that's like one of like her famous lines from that show. So, yeah, interesting casting choice that I would definitely see the movie just to see her performance and see what she does with it.
Yeah, I do think, you know, she's a younger actress. I think her star is on the rise. And I think that's what Marvel tries to capitalize on people who are on the way up. And yeah, I have no problem with it. I don't have a ton of a background with the Silver Surfer anyway. So I'm happy to be introduced to a different version because I don't know much about the original version anyway. So anyway, finally, last week was CinemaCon in Las Vegas and some big MCU stuff came out. Not big, but some stuff came out about the MCU. First off, the people who were there got to see 9 minutes of Deadpool and Wolverine, which that movie comes out July 26th, which we will be talking about for sure. It's also worth noting that Kevin Feige, the Marvel boss, said that much like how Dune 2 had a very crude popcorn bucket, Deadpool and Wolverine will also have one, but an intentionally crude one that Deadpool is quote unquote designing. So we got to see what that popcorn bucket is. I did not buy the Dune 2 popcorn bucket. Marcy or Brittany, did y'all get your hands on that?
No, I did not get my hands on that.
Maybe other body parts, but not the hands. Good Lord. No, to answer that question. Okay. No, I saw Dune 2. I want to say I liked it, but because I have literally no idea what's happening. Meh. But yeah. None of those popcorn buckets were available when I went to watch the movie. So I have seen mock-ups of what the Deadpool and Wolverine popcorn buckets may look like and definitely have Dune sandworm vibes. But I'm just going to leave it at that. I don't know if it's legit. I don't know if it's just like AI concept. I it's hard to know what's real and what isn't these days. But unless it's going to come from Ryan Reynolds himself or maybe Hugh Jackman, I'm not going to believe anything I see until that announcement is made.
Fair. That's fair. And the final item is at CinemaCon, there was also talk about Captain America Brave New World, which comes out next Valentine's Day 2025, Sam Wilson's Captain America, but Anthony Mackie as as Sam Wilson. Sorry, I just completely spaced on it.
They all become one.
No, because Anthony Mackie is Sam Wilson. He embodies that character. So that's why I got confused for a second.
Tomato.
But what's very exciting for a lot of Marvel fans, especially for you and I, Brittany, because we just talked about Captain America, the Winter Soldier, the 10-year anniversary.
Yep.
And this new Captain America movie is being compared to Captain America, the Winter Soldier, which is a more grounded, gritty, spy thriller superhero movie, which we don't have many of those. Brittany, what are your thoughts on hearing that?
I'm here for it. I'm here for it. I'm very, very much looking forward to that movie. One, because obviously Sam Wilson is getting his own movie and he's going to be Captain America. And then seeing how Harrison Ford can be our new Thunderbolt Ross, which I know I shared this with y'all in the chat. I just have to share it with everyone here. I was reading a friend's post on Facebook about the new movie that's about to come out, you know, the first look. And one of my friend's friend had asked, oh, who's Harrison Ford playing? To which my friend replied with, oh, some Secretary of State guy, you know, I don't know. I can't think of his name, you know, whatever. And so I follow up with, I said, well, he's replacing William Hurt's character, and that is Thaddeus, quote, Thunderbolt Ross, to which my friend's friend came back with, some Secretary of State guy? What are you talking about? Like, that's like an important character in the MCU in the Marvel universe. So
wait till they see that movie and what happens to that character.
I think it's already been spoiled, but yeah, it's you know.
And then the next Marvel movie after Captain America: Brave New World is a movie called Thunderbolts. Yep. Again, you said his name was Thunderbolt Ross, so
yeah,
that movie will be very interesting. Also,
now I did hear supposedly that our good friend Bucky will not be making an appearance in the new Captain America movie.
No.
However, Bucky will be in the Thunderbolts. Yeah. So we are going to lose him in something, but we're going to gain him in something else, which is fine.
Well, I don't think he was ever going to be in that Captain America movie anyway. So,
but he's Sam Wilson's BFF.
Fair. Fair point. Marcy, any thoughts on this new Captain America movie? And maybe, have you seen the other Captain America films?
Yeah, I have. That will be interesting. Love Anthony Mackie getting his own film. He's fine. But other than that, he's a great actor. So, yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to that one. Harrison Ford's in it. Yes, to that one. So, yeah, and then Thunderbolts as well. That sounds interesting. And being able to see Bucky again. So, yeah, good stuff coming down the pipe.
Yeah, a lot of good stuff happening for Marvel right now. And we just were able to talk about quite a bit of it. So anyway, that'll about do it for us. You know, now that you know what we think about all this stuff that's happening, but especially episode 5 of X-Men 97, we want to know what you think about it. And Brittany, how can people tell us what they think?
I mean, the people have been telling us here in the chat, y'all, and that is the best way to let us know. Obviously, we invite everyone. Even if you're watching our replay, join us for our next live chat on not only X-Men 97, but anything and everything else that we have coming your way. Justin mentioned that next week we're going to be talking anniversary of Endgame? Infinity War.
No, Avengers Endgame.
Avengers Endgame. Oh, my God. Yeah. Jeez. Oh, that movie. Anyway, that one's going to be a good one. Y'all definitely need to tune in for that one. So be sure to not only subscribe, but hit that notification bell for YouTube. That way, you know, the next time we're going to go live. And while you're at it, give us a like on this pod, this video, this live stream that we're doing right now, if you've enjoyed it, because I know we have. Can't speak for the rest of the watchers here, but I'm going to. We've enjoyed having y'all here. So big shout out to King B Johnson, Christian and McDorks. I'm going to scroll down here. Show Me Stacker and Yesenia and anybody and everyone else who has tuned in. Afterwards, we really appreciate you being here, and be sure to show us your Marvel Coke hands, and do that by tagging us and following us on social media. That's Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Threads at Watchers Basement. Use the hashtag Watchers Basement to, one, not only help grow our audience, but again, to share those picks. I want to see what you got, because I'm going to be on the hunt to get as many as I can, especially Doctor Strange. I gotta have Doctor Strange and Loki. Love Loki. So yeah, send us your memes, send us your pics, send us your articles, send us things that you want us to check out by using hashtag Watchers Basement. And lastly, we also got audio podcasts for those of you who are not into video podcasts. That's cool. We got you covered. So follow us on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Be sure to give us a 5-star rating.
Thank you, Brittany. I appreciate it. So for Brittany and for Marcy, I'm Justin saying thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. We will see you next time. Have a good night. Bye-bye.